And welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The most successful interplanetary exploration is about to come to an end. Almost everything we know about Saturn, we learned from Cassini. And on September 15th, the spacecraft takes its final plunge into the atmosphere of Saturn as scientists place bets on how long Cassini will send data before disintegrating. Tonight on SDPB-TV, you can catch the new NOVA special, Death Dive to Saturn. Joining us now with more is producer Paula Aspel. Paula, welcome.
Hi, Lori. Nice to talk to you.
It's nice to have you here, Paula Aspel. And let's talk a little bit about what's so special about Saturn, and take us back to how long scientists have been watching this program. When did it first get off the ground?
Well, this is actually a 20-year mission. It took the Cassini probe 7 years to get to Saturn, and now it's been exploring the rings and the moons of Saturn. There are 62 of them for the last 13 years. And of course, this week is particularly poignant because it's the end of the mission. They're putting everything together. And then on Friday morning at 5 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, they will crash the space probe into the atmosphere of Saturn, and it will break up and burn in a fiery end.
And so why now? Why is now the time to do that?
Well, I think that the mission has been going along for a long time, and they have billions of bytes of data that they can analyze, and they'll analyze it for years. But basically, the probe is out of fuel, so they have to. And the thing is, they didn't want to just let it wander about out in space until it ran out of fuel, because they were afraid that it would bump into habitable worlds like the moons of Titan and Enceladus. And if it had any microbes from Earth, if it were carrying any microbes from Earth, it would contaminate them. And then if ever in the future we actually reach those worlds, we might find not the microbes that are intrinsic to those worlds, if there are any, but we would see ourselves, and that would be very weird. So it was mandated, it was ordered, that they would have to destroy the spacecraft before it ran out of fuel.
Where did that lesson come from? Had that happened in other space exploration, or was that just scientists thinking ahead?
I think it's basically scientists thinking ahead. It may have come from an experience when some fossil rocks were found in Antarctica, and it's been a very big debate about whether these actually bear the fingerprints of microbes from outer space. You know, they've fallen down on Earth, or whether they're actually from they're not of biological origins from Earth. But it's something that that the scientists and engineers worry about a lot. And you'll notice whenever you see pictures of the engineers putting together and creating a probe like Cassini, you see that it's in a cleaning room, everybody has their hair covered, they have booties on, they wear uniforms. So they're really very, very, very fastidious about keeping the spacecraft clean. But, you know, you can never tell, and you can always get, you know, if someone just inadvertently touches it, you might get that individual's DNA on a space probe, or some kind of bacteria or virus that's on their skin that's long-lived. I mean, it's unusual that it would survive for so many years and survive the rigors that a spacecraft goes through in outer space, but it's possible, and the scientists just want to be extra careful.
Tell me about the spacecraft itself. How big is it? How much does it weigh? How is it equipped?
Well, I don't have those facts right now at hand. It is about 5,000 pounds, I believe, and it really, in a way, it looks quite ordinary, except it's just festooned with so many instruments. And I think the key thing to these probes is that scientists want to find out all different things about the place like Saturn that they're going to. They want to find out about the magnetic field, and they want to find out about the core, what's inside. They want to see if there's water. They want to see what kinds of elements are on these different moons and on Saturn itself. So everybody is competing to see if they can get their instrument on. But you have to remember something. This is old technology. It's right. around 1980s technology. And in fact, one of the things I found most interesting is they have a room at JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which is the organization that is responsible for Cassini. And that has all these old circuit boards and all this old equipment. And really, when you look at it, they look like antiques. But that is what's in the guts of Cassini. And every movement, every motion, every demand they're going to put on the probe, they test out on this equipment. Wow. So that they can make sure that they are going to be able to do it and that the equipment can withstand it.
All right, so tell me a little bit about the scientists' emotional state as they get ready to close this project, which for some has been the better part of a career.
Absolutely. One of the lead scientists, Linda Spilker, told us she has spent 30 years on the Cassini project.
Hmm.
And, you know, there's an enormous team of scientists. You can see them walking along. They all took a team picture the other day, and it's really amazing. There are hundreds of them. And these are the people that Linda has been working with for 30 years. And now, I mean, some of the team will stay on to do the analysis,
right.
but most of them will be going their own way. They'll be going on to other missions. And I think it's a moment, it's both a sad moment and a poignant moment, but it's also a moment of great pride because they have really accomplished an enormous amount. And really, and remember that they come from all over the world. The European Space Agency was involved in this with NASA. And so these were international. This is an international effort. But as one of the scientists tells us, I never really represented my country in this.
Yeah.
Cassini is family. So I think that tells you what you need to know about what that moment is going to be like. He also told us, I love this spacecraft. I mean, I think that they have a very, I mean, there's no question that they personify it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have very fond feelings. I think they're going to have some very tough moments on Friday and also in the months to come.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about NOVA's Death Dive to Saturn. It airs tonight on SDPB-TV, 8 Central, 7 Mountain. Paula, I'm wondering, these images that appear in the NOVA special are so spectacular, and you say there are so many of them. What did we learn about Saturn? I know that's a huge question that will take years to answer, but what are some of the highlights that we really learned about this planet that we didn't know before Cassini?
Well, Cassini has made, and the scientists and the engineers, they've just made a number of amazing discoveries. They revealed the surface of Titan, which is one of Saturn's moons. It looks like Mars, but it has lakes and rivers of liquid methane. And it's the only celestial body in the solar system with liquid on the surface. And it might actually have a water ocean beneath it. And they discovered that Enceladus, which is a tiny icy little moon, has an under-ice ocean, salty and warm. And that's regular water. And so the thought is there could indeed be life on Enceladus. It's certainly one of the places in the solar system that they're looking at. Everybody has always been fascinated with Saturn's rings. And one of the questions that the scientists wanted to answer are these rings as old as the solar system itself, 4.5 billion years old, or are they fairly recently? Were they formed fairly recently? And now the thought is, although there has to be a lot more analysis, that they are, in fact, pretty young. I think they said 100 million years or so. They're made of water ice and dust. Cassini also discovered moonlets. That's moons in the process of being formed in the rings. And that tells us something about planetary formation. Now, they're still trying to figure out what's inside, and I think they're going to really be probing all the data that they have. They want to know what the core, how big it is. They think it's pretty small now, and it's surrounded by liquid metallic hydrogen, and this metal churning around is what gives it a magnetic field. But I think most perplexing is its magnetic field, and you know, Earth's magnetic field, it protects us from solar storms and solar radiation. And in fact, if it weren't there, it would scour off our atmosphere and life would be impossible. And that's pretty much what happened to Mars. Its magnetic field is very weak. So the magnetic field on Saturn, and magnetic fields are very important, is not what they expected. On Earth, our magnetic field is at a tilt with the rotational axis of planet Earth. But instead, on Saturn, they're actually aligned. And that may mean that the way we understand how planets work, how planetary dynamics work, may be all wrong, or it may mean that the field itself is dying. So that's a mystery that they will be really scouring all the data to try to solve.
And there's a scientist in the program who says that's what scientists love. They're delighted to find out that they aren't right. They like to be baffled a little bit.
That's right. It was very funny when Michelle Dougherty said, do you understand? She said, someone said to her, so do you understand your data? And she said, no. And they said, well, how do you feel about it? And she said, well, it's really great.
Great.
Yes, scientists love that challenge.
What are we learning about how our own solar system was formed based on what we've learned about Saturn? Are there lessons there for us about how Earth came to be?
Well, I think right now it's still pretty much a mystery. You know, planetary formation, we know that there was a lot of dust in the early disk of the solar system, and that somehow the pieces of dust clumped together to make the planets. They think that the gas giants, which is Jupiter and Saturn, Neptune and Uranus, that they weren't in the position they're in now in the early solar system. But they're not exactly sure about all of this. And I think one thing that they're anxious to really look for in the data is much more about how the planets of the solar system and especially the gas giants themselves formed, because we know that most interestingly, the gas giants and the position that they were in really had a very important impact on the formation of the rocky planets like Earth. But I don't think it's clearly understood exactly what that is. And of course, we're all hoping that they will find information in this billions and billions of bytes of information that exists that they haven't analyzed yet to tell us more about it. But you have to understand, you know, these missions can each only accomplish a certain number of things. And they really, the important thing about them is that they give rise to questions that other missions can then be designed to answer. And I think that's the exciting thing. You know, space is very big, and these planets are very far away, and the technology to get there is very expensive and challenging. And we have to be patient explorers of our solar system. So I think that this group of scientists will be just as excited to formulate the questions for the next mission, which will tell us much more about planetary formation, including the formation of our own planet Earth.
Go back now? Are there plans to go back at this point, or is there a period of time where the data needs to be looked at? And I mean, it must take a long time to get the next mission up and running even.
It will take quite a long time to get another mission up and running. And, of course, NASA has many missions on the books right now that will be going. I just saw that OSIRIS-REx, which is a mission to actually get material from an asteroid, made its gravity assist around Earth just this week. So that's another really exciting mission. So there are so many missions on the books, but I remain convinced that they will go back to Saturn. Everyone loves Saturn because it's just so beautiful. And Titan, and especially Enceladus with its jets and the possibility of life, they're very, very enticing. So I think that very few of the scientists believe that we won't go back. And all of us who love planetary science and who are fascinated to find out how our planet was formed and others and our home, the solar system, how it was formed 4.5 billion years ago, are really hoping that this will be a mission that NASA does again in the future with more sophisticated technology.
One of the things
Saturn itself is like a mini solar system. I mean, think about this, 62 right. moons, all of these rings, moonlets forming in the rings. It's a solar system all in itself. And it's really worth exploring because it will teach us so much about our solar system in general.
And there's a gap between the rings and Saturn itself. Tell us a little bit about the first time scientists sort of decided they would explore the gap and really risk this space probe because they weren't sure what was going to happen.
Well, this began last April. And, of course, one of our scientists in the shows, Michelle, says this was nothing that the instruments on the probe were designed to do. So this was something that they really dreamed up because they wanted to get close to Saturn. And the trick is to get close enough to Saturn to get information about its core and its makeup without being drawn into the planet's atmosphere and then burning up. So that's what the challenge is. So it's made 22, now 21, 22 passes in that gap, each time getting closer and closer to Saturn. Now, on Friday morning, it made a gravity assist around the moon Titan after the 21st journey through the gap. It made a gravity assist around Titan to aim it in the right direction so that it will go right into the atmosphere and into the clouds, and that will be, sadly, the end.
And they call it the kiss goodbye.
The kiss goodbye. That was definitely the kiss goodbye.
And scientists are sort of placing bets with each other as far as how long will Cassini keep sending data back near the last. It's all over in a minute. And they're even not sure what the probe could send back in that last those last few seconds.
I know. I keep having fantasies that it will stay alive, streaming data for a long time and answer all of our questions. But I think that's probably a fantasy. I'm sure it's a fantasy.
But it's a nice one. So one of the things that NOVA does really well, I think, is along with presenting the science, really helping tell the broader story and showing scientists as the human beings that they are. And talking about Titan and the rain that falls in Titan, and there's a few scientists that compare it to their homelands and talk about the romantic sort of, stories that they tell themselves and where their imagination goes. So it's science and it's imagination. Is that something that's really intentional to you as filmmakers to make sure that it broadens out beyond the data and the technical information to really get at the humanity of this mission?
Well, science is above all a human endeavor. I mean, people do it. And science is not easy. And you have to be driven by passion, by curiosity, by the desire to figure things out. And I often find out that how we know what we know is just as interesting as the what we know. So these scientists, honestly, I have to tell you, Lori, with these scientists, it's very easy. They are very warm people. They're used to working in a team. They're very communicative. And they're absolutely 100% in love with the spacecraft, in love with Saturn, in love with their work. And they are very vocal about it. And so it is not difficult to portray their humanity because that's how they come across. It's not something that we have to put extra effort into. it is part and parcel of what they do and what they are. So, and we find that, you know, I'm not sure, after all my years as a science journalist, this idea that somehow scientists are very cold and robotic, this is not just in space science. It's all over. I find scientists extremely passionate people, great senses of humor, people who are driven by curiosity. They are intrinsically interesting people. So I find that throughout the sciences, and I think that somehow the stereotype, we've just got it really wrong. And I hope that programs like this, where you can really see the humanity of these men and women, and you can see their humanity is so obvious, I hope it helps display those erroneous notions about what new scientists are.
You've been listening to producer Paula Apsel. Nova's Death Dive to Saturn airs tonight on SDPB-TV. It's at 8 Central, 7 Mountain. Paula, thank you so much. It's a great program.
Thank you very much.